Ladies and gentlemen, okay. Dallas Snyder.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Well, as always, I have good news for you. The good news is that you are truly magnificent people. And you have to remember that. And the other thing to remember is that you are really princesses and princes of the universe. That this thing that we call God, you are part of. And you have to remember that all day long, all through your life. You know, you hear me talk about race mind all the time and what the world is saying. And so many people buy into everything that race mind tells them, and they buy in to what brand name religions have told people for years. And what brand named religions have told people for years is you're separate from God. That God is in heaven somewhere. That God is outside of you somewhere. And that you're always praying to something outside of yourself. And I am here to tell you that that is incorrect. You know, when they were coming up with different religions, especially the Christian religion, there were many different viewpoints and many different fractions going on inside of the organization itself. And they had to stabilize it. So they had to come up with something that was standard and something that people could understand so that they could galvanize the whole thing. And that's what the Universal Catholic Church, and there was only the Catholic Church before it splintered off into different things. It came up with the idea that God is outside of us. And that is not true. And I'm going to explain that in 1 minute, why that is not true. Not that they were trying to deceive anybody. You have to remember that the scriptures, and everyone thinks that we call it the Holy Bible. Bible, by the way, only means book. And that's the holy book. Well, over the centuries, and especially in the 4th century, the Bible was completely redone. Things were taken out. Things were put in. It was done by a committee. So you know, if you've ever been on a committee, you let me have this and I'll let you have that. So they came up with the Bible. And one of the things they came up with also was the Lord's Prayer, which the Lord's Prayer that we have today states, "Our Father who are in heaven." Immediately, separation with that. That's immediate. We think, oh, well, then God is somewhere else. God is not here with us. God is not in as and through us. We are not connected to God in any way. Well, the original text for the Lord's Prayer was that line, "Our Father who art in heaven," was translated, first of all, from the Aramaic language, then into Latin, then into Greek, and then into what, Lord knows what, different translations. Every time it was translated, a different translator put his stamp on it. So it changed over the centuries. But it originally stated this, "Radiant One, you shine within us. Outside of us, even darkness shines when we remember." When we remember that we are connected to God, even darkness shines when we remember that. And we have been taught all our lives that heaven is someplace else and that God is someplace else. And we have to get over that, especially in this metaphysical teaching. Because in the metaphysical teaching, excuse me, it is always unity. We have to have unity. We have to be one with God. That's why our little saying is, "All that I am is God, but I am not all that God is." because God is everywhere and God is everything. So we're immediately faced with this idea of separation, and we have been all our lives. But I'm here now to tell you that we learned something that isn't correct. That isn't correct. This translation from the Aramaic is from the Essenes. The Essenes were 500 years before Christ, and they kept all that. These things came from the Dead Sea Scrolls, when they found the Dead Sea Scrolls, which they finally have finished interpreting all that and putting them all together. So they're seeing things in completely different light than they did before. But so many people think that what they read in the Bible is absolutely true. Some of the stuff that you see in the Bible, read in the Bible, is true. Some is not true. The whole idea of Jesus being a master teacher, of course he was a master teacher. But in religious science or metaphysics, we believe in everything that Jesus said, but very little that's been said about him. Very little that's been said about him. You know him. We only have 23 days of his life that we know of. You didn't know that, did you? Well, if you read the Bible, it's only 23 days that's accounted for a man that has changed the face of the world. But we only know 23 days of his life. So it's interpretation and so forth. But what I want you to understand is that this was not done maliciously and so forth. People at that time had to do that type of thing to make other people, the who they thought were ignorant, because people did not read back then. So how are they going to understand something? They're going to understand it if you say God has a kingdom in heaven, because there were kings and queens at that time. So you had a say in that vernacular. You had a say in that thing. There's no God in heaven and sitting on a throne and crowned and all that kind of stuff. But they did that then because that's all they knew. And they misinterpreted a lot of the Bible, because in the 4th century, they didn't have all the scholars around that we have today. And they didn't have the nitpicking things around. And they didn't have all the different scientific ways that we can look at things now. We can look at things differently. So when you read the Bible, I'm not putting the Bible down at all, because the Bible can be read on many, many different levels. And because it is read and looked at so often, it has a vibration of its own now. And it means a great deal to people, and there's a lot of truth in the Bible. But you have to use your own mind when it comes to these things. So when I tell you that race mind is a very subtle and insidious thing, this is one example of it. We immediately say, Our Father who art in heaven. And it's a wonderful prayer. But you have to realize that God is everywhere present, and that God is at each and every one of us, that we are part of this power, we are part of this God. There is no separation. The reason why I'm always stressing that there is no separation, if you want to use this power, you have to know that it works in, as, and through you. It's very hard to use this power if you think it comes from a source outside of you. But once you know that you are the source itself, that you are the power of God, that power of God is working in, as, and through you every minute of every day, then you can solve your problems. Then you can demonstrate something. When you realize that God is perfection, and that God only creates perfection, then you have to start to see yourself as perfect. You have to start to see yourself as perfect. When you look in the mirror, you have to love every part of you. You have to know that you're perfect with your health. You have to know that your relationships are perfect. You have to know that your finances are perfect. You have to know that your job is perfect, that your career is perfect. That we're talking about perfection here. So when you know that you're connected with this power and that the power and you are one and the same thing, then you can start to change your mind about yourself. And this is what it's always going to boil down to. What do you think about yourself? And you have to know that you're a magnificent human being and that you are part of this whole thing. And if you think that God is a king, all well and good, but then you have to know that you are part of that king, that you are a princess or you are a prince, and that you have the same power. It says, and it states this in the Bible, know that ye are demigods. That's right there. No one ever points that out. No one underlines that. No brand name religion is going to tell you that. The same way no brand name religion is going to tell you that Jesus said, you can do this and more. You can do this and better. What I can do, you can do. They're not going to tell you that. And I'm not putting them down in any way. But what I have discovered in my lifetime is this. If you don't start to know who you are, that you are connected to this whole thing, this whole power, and that you absolutely love and adore yourself, life is not going to be very nice for you. You're not going to enjoy your journey through this phase of life. But once you know that you truly are a magnificent human being or a magnificent being, and that this power is working through you, and that you can use this power every minute of every day of your life by merely asking and by merely knowing that you're plugged into it, that you're plugged into it. And then you ask, and that's turning the switch. A light is plugged in at home, but only when you turn the switch does the bulb light up. And you have to turn the switch on. And you turn that switch on by asking and by believing that this is true. You have to start to believe that it's true. And it doesn't take that much belief. But as I say to people, if your life is working, then don't bother. But if you come here, it tells me that you want to know more about yourself. You want to have a better life. And you can have a better life. And it boils down to what are you thinking about yourself? You don't have to worry about what God is thinking about you. Because God always holds you in the highest of yourself. God always loves you. You can never, anything that you do or think or say, can never diminish what God thinks of you. God always loves you. Why does God always love you? Because you're part of God. You are part of God. And God never sits in judgment upon itself through you. Never sits in judgment upon itself. If God judged you, God would be judging itself. And God knows that you are perfect because God made you. And only perfection makes perfection. So start to see yourself as perfect, as whole, as complete. Know that. And nothing need be added to you. You have everything in you that you need to succeed and to thrive on this plane of action. But you change your mind about yourself and you know that you're worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that you matter. Learn those four things. Make them the foundation of not only your life, but the foundation of your thinking. The foundation of your thinking. And you will discover, you'll go to say something and you say, oops, I can't say that because I know I'm worthy. Whoops, I can't say that because I know I'm deserving. Whoops, I can't say that because I know I'm totally lovable. Whoops, can't say that one because I know I matter. And you'll get rid of all that garbage that is inside there. You'll just get rid of it because you can no longer do it. It just goes away from you, just sheds. You know, in the process of growing through this life, the thing that we learn the most is to learn to let go of things and shed things. Go through life lightly. Let everything just roll off of you. Don't hold on to it. Just let it go. The same as you take off of your clothing, take off all that stuff that's binding you in your mind. That's as easy as it can be. But know that you're worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that you matter. With that, let's do the matter dance. Amy doesn't. Do you haven't been here? Oh, all right.
Another show.
Are you ready? I matter. I matter. I really, really matter. I matter. I matter. I really, really matter. Yay! You all right, Rhoda? Okay.
She really matters.
Yes. Please learn these items. You'll read books. You'll go to school. You'll get an education. You'll do all those wonderful things for yourself. Now learn those four things for yourself. Make those four things work for yourself. And see your life change. And see your life change. That's not so difficult, is it, to learn four different things? And these are qualities that you have. You have these qualities within you. So don't let this ego mind talk you out of those things. Don't let it happen. No. Race mind alert. I was talking to a young lady today, this morning, and she was going on about birth control pills. And they have this new birth control pill out. You only have your period 3 times a year or something like that. And I said, that's the worst thing I ever heard of. And she said, oh, well, you could do this, that, and the other thing. And we got into something else, and I said, well, I don't believe any of that, and it's, I think it's very bad for your body, and she said, well, how about cramps and stuff, people? I said, you know, with exercise and with nutrition and all that, you do not have to have these cramps. You do not have to have all this. And then she said to me, ha-ha, but how about childbirth? She said, it's very painful. You can't get around. I said, you can learn to have a painless childbirth with the different breathing techniques. They now birth people, babies underwater. They do all kinds of things. But you can do that. Ah, she said, no, you can't do that. And I said, why not? She said, because what about Genesis? It's right in Genesis that you're going to have pain when you have birth of a baby. I looked at her and I said, what? Now, she absolutely believes that. That is a belief system. From the Bible, from Genesis. Now, what the woman does not know is, here again, that was changed in the 4th century by council. And what they most people do not know was, so Greek culture in the world, there is a Genesis story. There is a story of how the world began. The one that we happen to have in the Christian version is a Babylonian tale. It has nothing to do with Christianity whatsoever. Now, the other thing that most people do not realize in Genesis, there's the long version of creation and there's the short version of creation. There are two stories of creation in Genesis. No one knows that. They don't bother to see that. Many times in the Bible, the same story is repeated twice, but differently, and has different names and different people involved. Because they're first of all, they are called doublets. When that appears in the Bible, when you have the same story told twice, it's called a doublet. And why that has occurred, again, all this stuff, by the way, was political. Everything that's been done with religion boils down to politics. Boils down to politics. Does anyone remember, and I don't remember the Pope's name, but one of the popes, you know, was a pirate. And then he changed his life. And he got hooked up with the Medicis. And the Medicis, who had tons of money coming from Florence, had enough money to make him the Pope because they wanted to control the Vatican. Political. Political. So when you look at these things, you have to see those things. So what political reason was it for the Bible to have doublets? They were trying to unite the country. And they had a northern Bible and a southern Bible. And they had to put the two of them together so that they could unite the country. Because the south had its heroes and the north had its heroes. So in order to unite the country, they had to figure out how to intertwine the different stories. So that you will have a doublet in the story is one, and I could get the north and south wrong here. Don't quote me on the north and south. But say in the north's hero was Abraham. But the south's hero was Aaron. So you have the story of Abraham. And then you have the story of Abraham and Aaron together. They never were together. They never were together. But they had to do that to unite the country. So what I'm saying always is, learn to think for yourself. Learn to think for yourself. Don't read something and immediately say, that's right. That has to be right. Think it out for yourself. This teaching, by the way, never teaches you what to think. It teaches you how to think. All the things that I tell you, I just throw out there for you to digest it any way you want. But I don't tell you, now you must think this way. I just tell you to look at things differently. As soon as you look at something differently, the thing you look at changes. As soon as you look at something differently, the thing you look at changes. And it's all done with our mind. It's done with the way we think. That's why I always say we are not our minds. Our minds are ours to use. And we have to be able to use the mind. The mind that used to tell us how awful we were, how bad we were, how low self-esteem we had, all that kind of stuff. That's an out-and-out lie. But we buy into that. So now we have to retrain our mind so that it tells us that we are magnificent, that we are worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that we matter. We have to train our minds to tell us that. Because we trained our minds to tell us the other thing. Because we are around people who told us that, because they didn't know any different. But now we're old enough to think for ourselves and to be able to change our minds so that we can have the life that we want and that we can have a joyous life filled with joy and happiness and love and bliss, money, all the things that you really want. But you have to change your mind about yourself. You have to change your mind about yourself. I'm reading a book now where the author says that one of the problems in the world and the fear that most people have is the fear of low worth or low self-esteem. And they're afraid that they have it or that we all have it. You say, don't have low self-esteem. Don't have low worth. Know that you're magnificent. That this thing that we talk about, this thing that we call God, is operating in, as, and through you. And when you know that, you can't have low self-esteem. You just can't have low self-esteem. We have to work on that. We have to work on that. You know, parents who have low self-esteem cannot raise a child with high self-esteem. It's an impossibility. It's an impossibility. So we build our self-esteem. We have to do it. And why do we think we have low worth? It's out there in race mind. It's a thought atmosphere that's going on. And that is why I think I dropped out of brand name religions, because I saw so many people going every Sunday to church who had no self-esteem whatsoever, and they weren't getting anything, a message that this is wrong. Start thinking of yourself as magnificent. Remember last summer, I went to my brother's church, and you had to stand up before the service and read off their little doctrine there, which started, I know that I am unworthy. And that now I'm here, God, and whatever else it said. Right there, first statement. I said, well, I can't do that. My brother, you know, I'm not going to do something like that. But you can't go every Sunday to some place that's telling you that you're unworthy and then go out and think, oh, good thoughts about yourself. I don't know where religion went wrong. I don't know where it went wrong. Because this thing that created us loves us. And it loves us just the way we are. And always holds us in the highest of esteem. So we must learn to hold ourselves in that high esteem. Know who you are. Know where you came from. Stop thinking of your earthly existence that we know. Yes, I was born with these earthly parents. Marvelous parents. I'm not saying anything wrong with them. But know that you are connected to this thing that we call God. And then, if you want to talk about heredity, and you want to talk about genes and so forth, start saying, I come from good genes. You say, I come from something that is perfect. Instead of thinking, oh, I come from that mess of people, those horrible relatives, all that kind of stuff. No, don't do that to yourself. We're always trying to bring our consciousness up, to expand our consciousness, so that we can learn to think God thoughts after it. So we learn to bring that up. Everyone has heard this saying, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Everyone's heard that. Now, raise your consciousness, raise your thinking, and realize God, apple, tree. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. You see? If you're down here with your earthly parent, you can say that and say, oh, well, yes, that's true. I have all the same characteristics. I have the same traits. I have this, that, and the other thing. But if you raise it up, you say, this, your mother, your father, your relatives, this tree is secondary causation. God is always first cause. Always go to first cause. People stop at secondary causation because the world only sees secondary causation. Race mind only sees secondary causation. What are some of the secondary causations that the race mind sees and that science proves every time and that people absolutely believe? Genes. You're carrying genes that are going to cause this, that, and the other thing. Your DNA is a blueprint, and it carries all that. Stop thinking that that's the blueprint that it's carrying. Go up to first cause and know that the DNA that you are carrying carries what we call the God code, and that you are carrying the God code within you, and that your DNA is using that God code to keep you whole, complete, and perfect. To keep you whole, complete, and perfect. Now, after people bought into that whole gene thing, now they are discovering that we can actually change our DNA. We can change our DNA with our thinking. You see, the most marvelous thing, and one of the most marvelous gifts that we were given, is we can only think one thought at a time. And the thought that we are thinking is the dominant thought. So what do you want to think about yourself? What do you want to think about yourself? Remember, Henry David Thoreau said, a man becomes what he thinks about all day long. And we can learn to change our thinking. And all day long we can have a thought that says, I'm worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and I matter. We can have those thoughts. So, look at what's going on in your thinking. And don't buy in to every authority that comes out there and tells you something. Learn to think for yourself. But always go back to first cause and know that God is always the source of your supply. The source of your supply in everything. In everything. Remember, anytime you're having a problem, the only problem you're ever having is a God problem. There are no other problems but God problems. There's only ever one problem. And that's a God problem. And when you're having a problem, the God problem that you're having is that you just separated yourself from your source. And you think, oh, I'm separate here. Now I have to figure this all out for myself, and I have to do all this for myself, and I'm all alone in the world. No, you are not. You go right back to this power, to this thing that we call God. You are never alone in the world. You are never alone in the world. There's also no secrets in the world, but we'll get into that a little later. So, that is a race mind alert. Genesis, the Bible, birth control pills, all that kind of stuff. Total race mind. Total race mind. All right. This young man is going to tell us something that he wants to tell us.
Oh, I just, before we started, I was telling Dallas that I had kind of a little abundance thing happen this week and really over the weekend. Was wanting to have a roommate, almost started because Andy was crashing on the couch, and I said, "Do you want to just stay here?" And then the roommate, he said, "No." And then and moved across the city as fast as he could. Anyway, so then I interviewed a few people, and it just wasn't my thing. You know, it was like these people were—they were just kind of weird. I thought, well, it's just not the right time. So I reset up my office in that room and everything. And oddly enough, Andy's old roommate needed a place to crash, and so she came over, and he's been staying on the couch, and we just suddenly worked out a deal where she's going to stay, you know, in that room. And so I kind of needed the money to keep things going there. I was actually contemplating selling the place and moving into something that was just more manageable so I could do my projects and things like that. And then I had just done a project last week, kind of a rush thing. I write some music for this guy about once a year for his shows, and usually I have 2-3 months, and he sends me lyrics, and we work on it, and I kind of finish up the song and play it. He waited until like a week before the show opens and calls me, and so I said, okay, I'll get it done. And so I wrote the song, recorded it and everything, and this time we have kind of a package deal there. I just charge him a flat rate, and I retain rights to the song, but he has use of the song. And so I do this flat rate with it. Well, this time I decided, I spent a lot of hours on it, and I logged all of my hours on it, and I put it all on the invoice, and then subtracted that back out, which was almost half, which was almost double. The fee was almost double what the package rate was. And out of the blue, he called me. I was out with my girlfriend last night. We were having dinner, and out of the blue, he calls and goes, "This song is so great, and I'm booking the show so much, I'm going to pay your full invoice." And it was one of the first times where I didn't go, "Oh, you don't need to do that." I said it's the first time I didn't do that. In the past, I would have, you know, I'm like that, and it was one of the first times where I said, thank you very much, I appreciate it. And left it at that, and didn't argue with him, "Oh, you don't," you know, and didn't. I just accepted it. And I have not, I realized then that I have not been, I kind of, you know, just zoomed through all of my little negotiations where I go, you know, somebody will come in and maybe they're doing, I have a little recording studio for those of you that don't know, and they'll come in and maybe do a session, but they'll do a couple of sessions and they go, "Oh, do you want me to pay you now or just pay at the end?" And we'll just do an invoice at the end. I always do that. Well, I've stopped doing that for one thing. It's going, "Oh, yeah, we should close out today, you know, and let's go ahead and write a check for today." And I've just started operating more like that, where I used to just think, "Oh, well, I shouldn't take the money," or something. I don't know. And so it was kind of a neat little revelation this week to have that, especially last night when the phone call came out of nowhere.
I'm going to add this. 10-1, it was because all of a sudden he remembered that he was worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that he mattered. And as soon as he remembered those things, he was able to say, "Yes, thank you very much, the money." As soon as you do that, money is going to come to you. The whole idea of money is you cannot be vague around money. You cannot be vague around money. Money happens to be God in action. This thing that we call God, and we say it's the source of your supply, it always wants to give you something. But what happens when it gets down to this level? We say, "Oh, no, don't bother. Oh, I couldn't take that. It's no problem." It showers you with stuff, and we keep going, "Oh no, oh no, I can't. I don't need that. Don't bother with me." Learn to know that you matter and say, "Thank you. More, please." And you'll start getting more. Never turn down any of that stuff. But don't be vague around money. You're not going to be vague around money anymore. You're going to say, "No, I want the money up front. I want my money." Money is God in action. And the reason that most people push it away is because they don't think they're worthy of it. And I also think that, my thinking only now, it's a residual leftover from some religion, brand name religion that you are in, that always tells you it's more blessed to give than to receive, and that you really should be kind and generous to people, and all don't do that. I'm here to tell you, you can be kind and generous and still take the gift, take the money. How many times have you given a gift to somebody and they say, oh, you shouldn't have? Now, that just takes the whole thrill out of giving the gift, number one. Plus, are you going to give that person a gift again? No. But you know perfectly well the person says that. They think they're being very polite. But they're saying that because they don't think they're worthy of the gift. They don't think they're worthy of the gift. I take every gift and I say more, please. I take that all. And I don't think that, you know, I'm a bad person for doing that. You know, it's nice. It's nice. I'll tell you a quick story. We're talking always about feelings. And I'm always telling you that you have to, if you want something in life, you have to have a feeling. You have to get a feeling. With the vision, which is called the mental equivalent. But to really get something, it comes from here. My friend Joyce Reynolds, who's considered, she considers herself a motivator, a one or a thousand, always says she hooks something from here. She hooks it with a feeling. I want that. Oh, and you feel it. Oh, it feels so good. As soon as you get that feeling, as soon as you hook that feeling, the thing is yours. My friend upstairs, Nancy, is sick. So I went up on Sunday, and there was a magnificent tray, Chinese, with cranes on it. Never seen it before. I went into her bedroom. She can't get out of bed. I could have stole it, but I didn't. I said, Nancy, where did you get that tray? She said, what tray? I said, the one with the cranes out there. She said, do you want it? I said, yes, thank you. But I knew what, I knew as soon as I saw the tray, I loved it that much that the hook went out. And I knew as soon as that hook went out that she would give it to me. And I said, that, oh, you want it? You can have it. Now, it's in my house. It's done with the feeling. And it's also done with, oh, I couldn't ask, or I couldn't do, Get rid of those. Get rid of that. You were taught wrong. We were all taught wrong. It's just as blessed to receive as to give. The whole idea in life is to keep everything circulating. Giving and receiving, giving and receiving, giving and receiving, giving and receiving, giving and receiving. That day I gave a gift to somebody else. It just goes on and on like that. But with money, don't be vague around money. Don't be afraid of money in any way. Here's a money question. What is the simple interest on $1 billion? What is the simple interest on $1 billion? 53 million a year. You should know that, in case anyone ever comes up in a conversation. The reason why I do that is just, you have to think about money. Oprah. You have to think about money. You can't be vague around money. You have to know money. You have to know, what is the interest I'm paying on that credit card? Is there a transaction fee when I use that credit card? These are things that you learn. Then you're not vague around money. Then you're not afraid of money. Then you can accept money because you've taken the power away from it. But always remember that money is God in action. That's why we write on our checks, God bless and multiply this money quickly. Because that's money is going out as God in action, and it's paying somebody's rent. It's paying somebody's food. It's doing marvelous work out there. And when it does that marvelous work, it has to come right back to you. It has to come right back to you. The whole idea, as I said earlier, was learning to give things up. It's learning to release things. Just release them. and they'll come back to you. Just that easy. And you're now, I'm delighted with that story, because your prosperity and abundance is going to blossom, because you now can ask for things, and you can ask for money. You see? And it was a little ha-ha experience, wasn't it? Because you realized it's completely different. You thought, oh my God, I never thought that way before.
Yes.
That's what we want. You see, we want that change in thinking. We want that change in thinking. Each and every one of you is having that, by the way, and I always forget to tell you this. I'm absolutely proud of each and every one of you, because I see the change in all of you. You don't see the change because you're in the change. But I see the change. You've changed. You know you've changed. You've changed. You've certainly changed. You've changed. Rhoda and Rose have changed. I know Rhoda here. Yeah, she got older. But Rhoda's enjoying her life more each and every day, aren't you? And you've changed. So I see it. And I love being a part of it. I love being a part of it. I love being a part. But you people have done it. So pat yourselves on the back. Give yourselves credit for it. I have a client that says, oh, I'm not doing enough. I'm not doing this. I should be doing more. Oh, meaning something out there. I said, aren't you working on yourself? Aren't you changing yourself? Why, yes. Well, that's doing something. That's doing something. You see, Ray's mind tells you that you have to be doing something in the world. You have to build something. You have to have a career. You have to do this. You have to do that. That's all on the outside of life, people. It's the inside of life that you're working on. This is the most important thing that you can do on this plane of action, is work on yourself so that you know that you're worthy, loving, totally lovable, and that you matter. No. If you accomplish that, that's the biggest deal in the world. That's much more than building an apartment building. Go ahead.
Nothing to say.
No, it's nothing to say. 45 years ago, and hasn't given that up. Now, whatever that problem was, everyone else has forgotten it. God never remembered it to begin with. And now here is the thing that I'm going to tell you, which wrote it. I'm going to fill in the story. Her husband at the present moment is in hospice. Now, he's ready to leave this plane of action without ever knowing what a wonderful human being he was, without ever forgiving himself. And for 45 years, he has beaten himself up over something. Do not do that to yourself, people. Don't do that to yourself.
I would have done the same thing to the planet.
Yes, you would have done the same thing. You have to forgive yourself. First of all, as I said earlier, God never sets in judgment upon itself through you. So if you're holding anything, waiting for God to forgive you, God will not forgive you. God is not in the forgiving business. I don't care what anybody tells you. Jerry Fodwell, thank God he's dead. Billy Graham, the Pope, or whatever. Don't do it.
Kind of along the same line, I was talking with one of my wife's friends today. Because my wife and kids went to Thailand last Friday, so I'm at home and we're doing a bunch of stuff at the house. Oh, yeah, they're going to come tomorrow. They're going to, you know, put the tent over the house for the termites and all that stuff. She goes, you know, we moved into our house like 3 years ago, and we should have tented the house before we moved in, because the guy came after and told us we had over the termites, and now for us to get out, it's going to take a bunch of time, and we have to pay the hotel and all this other stuff. She goes, that was so, you know, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that. I said, hey, Tam. I said, you know what? Just forgive yourself. And you know what she said? She goes, oh!
please, you have to forgive yourself. God cannot forgive you because God has never condemned you. No church in the world can do it for you, and I cannot do it for you. The only person that can do it for you is you. Because I don't care if you have a pope, a rabbi, or anyone say, oh, you're forgiven. If you don't forgive yourself, it doesn't matter how many blessings are put upon you. You hold it till you forgive yourself. That's the whole story of Job in the Bible, by the way, people. He finally came to his senses and forgave himself, and everything was returned to him. Ha ha! Listen to that one. Forgive yourself and everything is returned to you. Everything meaning peace of mind. But there is no absolute, no rationalization, and absolutely no sense to holding something against yourself. And to be in the position that Rhoda's husband's in, ready to make his transition, and for 45 years he's held a grudge against or whatever and has not been able to forgive himself. Now, as much as he did in his life, the big one would have been to forgive himself, wouldn't it? So the man, I can tell you, has not had peace of mind in those 45 years. He has not had peace of mind. And that's what it's all about. One thing that I did learn in brand name churches was, and I always loved it, the peace. God will give you the peace that passes all understanding. Meaning the peace that we're seeking for is so wonderful, so big, so marvelous, so grand and great that we can't understand it because we have a finite mind. But everyone here, if I had $1 billion on the table and peace of mind on the table, what would you take? It's tempting. You could take both. But if you took peace of mind, you would get the $1 billion. Because it's peace of mind that's going to bring you everything that you want. And that peace of mind starts with those four items that I always mention. Worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that you matter will bring you peace of mind. Because you won't spend half your day scolding yourself. You won't spend half your day with that thought, oh, I shoulda. You see? Save you a great deal of time. A great deal of time. A great deal. Tonight's topic was great. I'll do a quick topic. Tonight's topic was dominion. And that is something for us all to remember, that we were promised dominion. And that we do have dominion over everything in our lives and over everything on this plane of action. We have dominion over everything. So if you're having any difficulty, if you're having a so-called problem or anything, remind yourself, I have dominion over this. I have the power to change this. And you will be able to change it. You will be able to change it by just remembering how much power you have. And that was a promise that was made, that you would have dominion over everything on this plane of action. And that means yourself, and that means your health, and that means everything. Your finances, your relationships, everything you have dominion over. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing to know. It's wonderful. So are you. So am I. And there ends the lesson. Thank you.